The School for Scandal, Act 1, Scene 1, Lady Sneerwell's House.
The paragraphs, you say, were all inserted? They were, madam. And as I copied them myself in a feigned hand, there can be no suspicion whence they came. Did you circulate the report of Lady Brittle's intrigue with Captain Boastal? Madam, by this time Lady Brittle is the talk of half the town, and I doubt not in a week the men will toast her as a demirep. What have you done as to the insinuation as to a certain baronet's lady and a certain cook? That is in as fine a train as your ladyship could wish. I told the story yesterday to my own maid, with directions to communicate it directly to my hairdresser. He, I am informed, is a brother who courts a milliner's prentice in Pall Mall, whose mistress has a first cousin whose sister is femme de chambre to Mrs. Clackkit, so that in the common course of things it must reach Mrs. Clackkit's ears within 24 hours, and then, you know, the business is as good as done. Why, truly, Mrs. Clackett has a very pretty talent, a great deal of industry, yet, yes, been tolerably successful in her way. To my knowledge, she has been the cause of breaking off 6 matches, of 3 sons being disinherited and 4 daughters being turned out of doors, of 3 several elopements, as many close confinements, 9 separate maintenances, and 2 divorces. Nay, I have more than once traced her causing a tête-à-tête in the Town and Country magazine, when the parties perhaps had never seen each other's faces before in the course of their lives. She certainly has talents, but her manner is gross. This very true, she generally designs well, has a free tongue and a bold invention, but her colouring is too dark and her outline often extravagant. She wants that delicacy of tint and mellowness of sneer which distinguish your ladyship's scandal. Ha, you are partial, verjuice. Not in the least. Everybody allows that Lady Sneerwell can do more with a word or a look than many can with the most labored detail, even when they happen to have a little truth on their side to support it. Yes, my dear verjuice, I am no hypocrite to deny the satisfaction I reap from the success of my efforts. Wounded myself in the early part of my life by the envenomed tongue of slander, I confess I have since known no pleasure equal to the reducing others to the level of my own injured reputation. Nothing can be more natural. But, my dear Lady Sneerwell, there is one affair in which you have lately employed me, wherein I confess I am at a loss to guess your motives. I conceive you mean with respect to my neighbor, Sir Peter Teazle, and his family, Lappet. And has my conduct in this matter really appeared to you so mysterious? Entirely so. An old bachelor as Sir Peter was, having taken a young wife from out of the country, as Lady Teazle is, are certainly fair subjects for a little mischievous raillery. But here are 2 young men to whom Sir Peter has acted as a kind of guardian since their father's death, the eldest possessing the most amiable character and universally well spoken of, the youngest the most dissipated and extravagant young fellow in the kingdom, without friends or character, the former one an avowed admirer of yours and apparently your favorite, the latter attached to Maria, Sir Peter's ward, and confessedly beloved by her. Now, on the face of these circumstances, it is utterly unaccountable to me why you, a young widow with no great jointure, should not close with the passion of a man of such character and expectations as Mr. Surface, and more so, why you should be so uncommonly earnest to destroy the mutual attachment subsisting between his brother Charles and Maria. Then at once, to unravel this mystery, I must inform you that love has no share whatever in the intercourse between Mr. Surface and me. No, his real attachment is to Maria, or her fortune, but finding in his brother a favored rival, he has been obliged to mask his pretensions and profit by my assistance. Yet still I am more puzzled why you should interest yourself in his success. Heavens, how dull you are! Cannot you surmise the weakness which I hitherto, through shame, have concealed even from you? Must I confess that Charles, that libertine, that extravagant, that bankrupt in fortune and reputation, that he it is for whom I am thus anxious and malicious, and to gain whom I would sacrifice everything? Now indeed your conduct appears consistent, and I no longer wonder at your enmity to Maria. But how came you and Mr. Surface so confidential?
For our mutual interest. But I have found out him a long time since, although he has contrived to deceive everybody beside. I know him to be artful, selfish, and malicious, while, with Sir Peter, and indeed with all his acquaintance, he passes for a youthful miracle of prudence, good sense, and benevolence. Yes, yes, I know Sir Peter vows he has not his equal in England, and above all he praises him as a man of sentiment.
True, and with the assistance of his sentiments and hypocrisy, he has brought Sir Peter entirely in his interests with respect to Maria, and is now, I believe, attempting to flatter Lady Teazle into the same good opinion towards him, while poor Charles has no friend in the house, though I fear he has a powerful one in Maria's heart, against whom we must direct our schemes.
Mr. Surface.
Show him up, he generally calls about this time. I don't wonder at people's giving him to me for a lover.
My dear Lady Sneerwell, how do you do today?
Verges has just been arraigning me on our mutual attachment now, but I have informed him of our real views and the purposes for which our geniuses at present cooperate. You know how useful he has been to us, and believe me, the confidence is not ill-placed.
Madam, it is impossible for me to suspect that a man of Mr. Verjuice's sensibility and discernment...
Well, no compliments now. But tell me when you saw your mistress, or what is more material to me, your brother.
I have not seen either since I saw you, but I can inform you that they are at present at variance. Some of your stories have taken good effect on Maria.
Ah, my dear Verjuice, the merit of this belongs to you. But do your brother's distresses increase?
Every hour. I am told he had another execution in his house yesterday. In short, his dissipation and extravagance exceed anything I have ever heard of.
Poor Charles.
True, madam. Notwithstanding his vices, one can't help feeling for him. Ah, poor Charles. I'm sure I wish it was in my power to be of any essential service to him. For the man who does not share in the distresses of a brother, even though merited by his own misconduct, deserves...
Oh, Lud, you are going to be moral, and forget that you are among friends.
Egad, that's true. I'll keep that sentiment till I see Sir Peter. However, it is certainly a charity to rescue Maria from such a libertine who, if he is to be reclaimed, can be so only by a person of your ladyship's superior accomplishments and understanding.
To be a hazardous experiment.
But, madam, let me caution you to place no more confidence in our friend Snake the Labeller. I have lately detected him in frequent conference with old Roland, who was formerly my father's steward and has never been a friend of mine.
I'm not disappointed in Snake. I never suspected the fellow to have virtue enough to be faithful even to his own villainy. Maria, my dear, how do you do? What's the matter? Oh, here's that disagreeable lover of mine, Sir Benjamin Backbite, has just called at my guardian's with his odious Uncle Crabtree, so I slipped out and ran hither to avoid them. Is that all? Lady Sneerwell, I'll go and write the letter I mentioned to you.
If my brother Charles had been of the party, madam, perhaps you would not have been so much alarmed.
Nay, now you are severe, for I dare swear the truth of the matter is Maria heard you were here. But, my dear, what has Sir Benjamin done that you should avoid him so? Oh, he has done nothing, but his conversation is a perpetual libel on all his acquaintance.
Aye, and the worst of it is there is no advantage in not knowing them, for he'll abuse a stranger just as soon as his best friend, and Crabtree is as bad.
Nay, but we should make allowance. Sir Benjamin is a wit and a poet. For my part, I own, madam, wit loses its respect with me when I see it in company with malice. What do you think, Mr. Surface?
Certainly, madam, to smile at the jest which plants a thorn on another's breast is to become a principal in the mischief.
Pshaw, there's no possibility of being witty without a little ill nature. The malice of a good thing is the barb that makes it stick. What's your opinion, Mr. Surface?
Certainly, madam. That conversation where the spirit of raillery is suppressed will ever appear tedious and insipid.
Well, I'll not debate how far scandal may be allowable, but in a man I am sure it is always contemptible. We have pride, envy, rivalship, and a thousand motives to depreciate each other, but the male slanderer must have the cowardice of a woman before he can traduce one.
I wish my cousin Virgius hadn't left us. He should embrace you.
Ah, he's an old man, and is privileged, of course.
Madam, Mrs. Candor is below, and if your ladyship's at leisure, will leave her carriage.
Beg her to walk in. Now, Maria, however, here is a character to your taste. For though Miss Candor is a little talkative, everybody allows her to be the best-natured and best sort of woman. Yes, with a very gross affectation of good nature and benevolence, she does more mischief than the direct malice of old Crabtree.
Faith, 'tis very true, Lady Sneerwell. Whenever I hear the current running against the characters of my friends, I never think them in such danger as when Candor undertakes their defense.
Hush, here she is. My dear Lady Sneerwell, how have you been this century? I have never seen you, though I have heard of you very often. Mr. Surface, the world says scandalous things of you, but indeed it is no matter what the world says, for I think one hears nothing else but scandal.
Just so, indeed, ma'am.
Ah, Maria, child, what is the whole affair of between you and Charles? His extravagance, I presume the town talks of nothing else.
I am very sorry, ma'am. The town has so little to do.
True, true, child. But there's no stopping people's tongues. I own I was hurt to hear it, as I indeed was to learn from the same quarter that your guardian, Sir Peter, and Lady Teazle have not agreed lately so well as could be wished.
'Tis strangely impertinent for people to busy themselves so.
Very true, child. But what's to be done? People will talk. There's no preventing it. Why, it was but yesterday I was told that Miss Gadabout had eloped with Sir Filigree. But, Lord, there is no minding what one hears, though, to be sure, I had this from very good authority.
Such reports are highly scandalous.
So they are, child. Shameful, shameful. But the world is so censorious, no character escapes. Lord, now, who would have suspected your friend Miss Prim of an indiscretion? Yet such is the ill nature of people that they say her uncle stopped her last week just as she was stepping into a post-chaise with her dancing master.
I'll answer, for there are no grounds for the report.
Oh, no foundation in the world, I dare swear. No more probably than for the story circulated last month of Mrs. Festino's affair with Colonel Cassino, though to be sure that matter was never rightly cleared up.
The license of invention some people take is monstrous indeed.
'Tis so, but in my opinion, those who report such things are equally culpable.
To be sure they are. Tale-bearers are as bad as the tale-makers. 'Tis an old observation and a very true one. But what's to be done, as I said before? How will you prevent people from talking? Today, Mrs. Clackett assured me, Mr. and Mrs. Honeymoon were at last become mere man and wife, like the rest of their acquaintance. She likewise hinted that a certain widow in the next street had got rid of her dropsy and recovered her shape in a most surprising manner. At the same time, Miss Tattle, who was by affirmed that Lord Boffalo had discovered his lady at a house of no extraordinary fame, and that Sir Harry Bouquet and Tom Saunter were to measure swords on a similar provocation. But, Lord, do you think I would report these things? No, no. Tale-bearers, as I said before, are just as bad as the tale-makers.
Ah, Mrs. Candor, if everybody had your forbearance and good nature.
I confess, Mr. Surface, I cannot bear to hear people traduced behind their backs, and when ugly circumstances come out against our acquaintances, I own I always love to think the best. By the way, I hope 'tis not true that your brother is absolutely ruined.
I am afraid his circumstances are very bad indeed, ma'am.
Ah, I heard so. But you must tell him to keep up his spirits. Everybody, almost, is in the same way. Lord Spindle, Sir Thomas Splind, Captain Quinsey, and Mr. Nickit, all up, I hear, within this week. So if Charles is undone, he'll find half his acquaintance ruined too, and that, you know, is a consolation.
Doubtless, ma'am, a very great one.
Mr. Crabtree and Sir Benjamin Backbite.
Oh, Maria, you see, your lover pursues you. Positively, you shan't escape.
Lady Sneerwell, I kiss your hand. Mrs. Candor, I don't believe you are acquainted with my new nephew, Sir Benjamin Backbite. Egad, ma'am, he has a pretty wit, and is a pretty poet, too, isn't he, Lady Sneerwell?
Oh, fie, uncle.
Nay, egad, it's true. I back him at a rebus or a charade against the best rhymer in the kingdom. Has your ladyship heard the epigram he wrote last week on Lady Frizzle's feather catching fire? Do Benjamin repeat it, or the charade you made last night, extempore at Mrs. Drowsy's conversazione? Come now, your first is the name of a fish, your second a great naval commander. And,
dear uncle, now, prithee.
Faith, ma'am, 'twould surprise you to hear how ready he is at all these things.
I wonder, Sir Benjamin, you never publish anything.
To say truth, ma'am, 'tis very vulgar to print, and as my little productions are mostly satires and lampoons, I find they circulate more by giving copies in confidence to the friends of the parties. However, I have some love elegies, which, when favored with this lady's smile, I mean to give to the public.
For heaven, ma'am, they'll immortalize you. You'll be handed down to posterity, like Petrarch's Laura, or Waller's Saccharissa.
Yes, madam, I think you will like them. When you shall see in a beautiful quarto page how a neat rivulet of text shall meander through a meadow of margin, forget, they will be the most elegant things of their kind.
But, ladies, have you heard the news?
What, sir? Do you mean the report of—
No, ma'am, that's not it. Miss Nicely is going to be married to her own footman.
Impossible.
Ask Sir Benjamin.
'Tis very true, ma'am. Everything is fixed and the wedding livery bespoke.
Yes, and they say there were pressing reasons for it.
It cannot be. And I wonder anyone should believe such a story of so prudent a lady as Miss Nicely.
Oh, lud, ma'am, that's the very reason 'twas believed at once. She has always been so cautious and so reserved that everybody was sure there was some reasons for it at bottom.
Yes, a tale of scandal is as fatal to the reputation of a prudent lady of her stamp as a fever is generally to those of the strongest constitutions. But there is a sort of puny, sickly reputation that is always ailing yet will outlive the robuster characters of 100 prudes.
True, madam, there are valetudinarians in reputation as well as constitution, who, being conscious of their weak part, avoid the least breath of air, and supply their want of stamina by care and circumspection.
Well, but this may be all mistake. You know, Sir Benjamin, very trifling circumstances often give rise to the most injurious tales.
That they'll do, I'll be sworn, ma'am. Did you ever hear how Miss Shepherd came to lose her lover and her character last summer at Tunbridge? Sir Benjamin, you remember it.
Oh, to be sure, the most whimsical circumstance.
How was it, pray?
Why, one evening at Mrs. Ponto's assembly, the conversation happened to turn on the difficulty of breeding Nova Scotia sheep in this country. Says a young lady in company, I have known instances of it, for Miss Letitia Shepherd, a first cousin of mine, had a Nova Scotia sheep that produced her twins. What, cries the old dowager Lady Dundeasy, who you know is as deaf as a post, has Miss Letitia Shepherd had twins? This mistake, as you may imagine, threw the whole company into a fit of laughing. However, 'twas the next morning, everywhere reported, and in a few days believed by the whole town, that Miss Letitia Shepherd had actually been brought to bed of a fine boy and girl, and in less than a week, there were people who could name the father, and the farmhouse where the babies were put out to nurse.
Strange indeed.
Matter of fact, I assure you. Oh, lud, Mr. Surface, pray is it true that your uncle Sir Oliver is coming home? Not that I know of indeed, sir. He has been in the East Indies a long time. You can scarcely remember him, I believe. Sad comfort on his arrival to hear how your brother has gone on. Charles has been imprudent, sir, to be sure. But I hope no busy people have already prejudiced Sir Oliver against him. He may reform.
To be sure, he may. For my part, I never believed him to be so utterly void of principle as people say. and though he has lost all his friends, I am told nobody is better spoken of by the Jews.
That's true, egad, nephew. If the old jewelry was a ward, I believe Charles would be an alderman. No man more popular there, for God, I heard he pays as many annuities as the Irish taunting, and that whenever he's sick, they have prayers for the recovery of his health in the synagogue.
Yet no man lives in greater splendor. They tell me when he entertains his friends, he can sit down to dinner with a dozen of his own secretaries, have a score tradesmen waiting in the antechamber, and an officer behind every guest chair.
This may be entertainment to you, gentlemen, but you pay very little regard to the feelings of a brother.
Their malice is intolerable. Lady Sneerwell, I must wish you a good morning. I'm not very well.
Dear, she changed color very much. Do, Mrs. Candor, follow her. She may want assistance.
That I will with all my soul, ma'am. Poor dear girl, who knows what her situation may be.
'Twas nothing but that she could not bear to hear Charles reflected on, notwithstanding their difference.
The young lady's penchant is obvious.
But, Benjamin, you mustn't give up the pursuit for that. Follow her and put her into good humor. Repeat her some of your verses. Come, I'll assist you.
Mr. Surface, I did not mean to hurt you, but depend on your brother is utterly undone.
Oh, lud, I undone, as ever man was, can't raise a guinea.
And everything sold, I'm told, that was movable.
I was at his house, not a thing left but some empty bottles that were overlooked, and the family pictures, which I believe are framed in the wainscot.
And I'm very sorry to hear also some bad stories against him.
Oh, he has done many mean things, that's certain.
But however, as he is your brother,
we'll tell you all another opportunity.
Ha ha ha! 'Tis very hard for them to leave a subject they have not quite run down.
And I believe the abuse was no more acceptable to your ladyship than Maria.
I doubt her affections are farther engaged than we'd imagine. But the family are to be here this evening, so you may as well dine where you are, and we shall have an opportunity of observing farther. In the meantime, I'll go and plot mischief, and you shall study sentiments.